You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Aaron Orendorf. Aaron is a regular contributor at Entrepreneur, Lifehacker, Huffington Post, Fast Company, Business Insider, Content Marketing Institute, Copy Blogger, Unbounce, and more. When he's not terrifying college students in the public speaking classroom, he's busy saving the world from bad content at iconiccontent.com. Grab his ultimate content creation checklist or follow him on Twitter. Aaron, welcome to On Brand.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Nick. I'm really excited to chat with you. I looked at some of the other podcasts you've done, and boy, I'm super excited to join that list of characters.
Well, speaking of lists of characters, you have several sites, very well-known sites that you are providing content for. And as someone that is writing content all over the place, what kinds of consistent themes do you feel like anything is emerging in terms of, wow, I'm talking about X a lot lately?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I'll give you the keyword that I set out to rank for with a lot of these guest posts, and then I'll tell you the one I sort of stumbled into, but I'm loving. So obviously, the first one is just, I'm a copywriter, I'm a content strategist, so I'd love to hit those terms and try to get them as high up there on the list as I can in Google so people recognize me for that writing stuff. So I've done really well with a couple of posts that link back to my own site to give me some real juice on top copywriters and especially top copywriting books. I had a fantastic post that was a huge labor of love to put together on my site that's just done incredibly well on like the top 10 online copywriters, top 10 copywriting books. So that was great. But I'll tell you, the one that I've stumbled into, and actually I didn't realize I was doing this until I realized I was doing it, is the topic of failure. So I wrote a few pieces for my own blog, gosh, over the last 2 years on a failed copywriting pitch, how to go after things over and over again. I've got this great sort of running theme of rejection on my own site. I talk about it when I go places to speak. And so I just stumbled into Moz did this great job of recruiting me as a customer on their whole SEO tool and let me know, and I had no idea, that I am ranking really high for how to fail, which I don't know if that's a... Wow. And that's a good thing to be associated with, but I think it is. And when we talk about branding, I could tell you more about that as well. But yeah, so these two extremes, top copywriter and how to fail.
Top copywriter and how to fail. And failure is one of those that if I'm being honest, I would learn that and I'd be like, oh, ha. But I would also think back to, you know, everything that we know about great content is what people are looking for help with. And that's certainly a very urgent term, I would say also, and people that probably really need help in those areas also.
Oh, absolutely. I just had the great opportunity to go up to Unbounce's conference in Canada last month. And it was my first full-on upfront conference speaking spot. And I intentionally built the whole thing around this idea of rejection and failure, being honest, being human. And it was great because there was that theme showed up a lot in the conference itself, especially on the branding front. And there's other words that it's known under: authenticity, vulnerability, transparency. But it just comes back to this whole, you know, a brand is a story, and it has to be human, whether or not you're branding yourself or branding your business or like at a corporate level, that the people connect with people, and people connect with people's failures. They identify with that so much more readily than our successes and our wins and our hero stories, that kind of thing.
I love that too, because that's, you know, it again can be kind of surprising, but it is something that people are really challenged with, and
yeah.
That is. So how have you, are you baking failure into your brand is an odd question that I can't think of any other way to ask.
No, I love it. And I absolutely am. And it started really just on my own blog. I never thought of doing this for the guest posts for quite a while, like that great big list of names that you mentioned. Because what you see so much on those sites is this best faced forward, I'm going to give you the best stats on the best articles or the best revenue numbers to make myself look as good as I possibly can. But on my own site, you know, I found that it's obvious once you say it out loud that the best lessons, the best moves forward have always been on the heels of some sort of rejection or failure. And when I saw that starting to really resonate, and this was so true, every time I would post something on my own site, hit up my email list, the emails that I would actually get responses to, you know, people would take the time to write back, were the ones where I was pulling back the curtain and saying, here's what went wrong. This is where I don't look good. So now, absolutely, I've had that as a running theme very intentionally, not only on my own site now, but even on the guest posts. And like I said, that entire conference spot, my first one up front, was all about rejection and let's get rejected and anticipating that and almost like making that the goal of the kind of content we create to get rid of that fear that holds us back from doing truly great things.
So in looking at all of this too, it seems like the other kind of common thread here is on the content side of things. So what in terms of content challenges that you think brand builders today are facing, what do you run into most there?
Boy, you know, the internet is such a noisy, crowded place. And it's almost cliche to say that. It's just so obvious. You know, anytime somebody launches a new blog or, you know, starts their own sort of channel on Medium, that's exactly almost the first thing they talk about is, why are we doing this? Why another blog? Why another channel? Why another, you know, fill in the blank? And so that noise and finding ways to stand out from that while at the same time being aware of what's popular. So you can piggyback on what people are already interested in, what they're searching for, what they're sharing, but having that new slant or bend or voice, that finding that sweet spot is really challenging and difficult.
So how do you advise, you know, because I recognize that kind of cliff, that plateau, that edge that you get to of, okay, so now what? With those big questions of why another blog, why another channel, you know, how do you advise clients, students, audience members to answer that almost existential question about content?
Yeah. Well, when it comes to clients, especially when I'm working with a business, A lot of the first, you know, get-togethers we have, whether it's digital or I'm sort of giving them homework assignments, you mentioned that ultimate content creation checklist that I've got on my website right now, is to get an idea of, and this, again, sounds so cliche, their own particular passions. And it's not so much just like a follow your bliss idea, but it is the idea that there's going to be an overlap between what people are already talking about. Like, for instance, a couple of years ago, I had my first really big design and development firm client, and we put together a ton of posts front-loaded the launch of their blog. And the best stuff were the things that not necessarily like the partners came up with, but that overlap between what their coders were into and interested in and what people were asking questions about on Reddit and GitHub, and being very intentional about piggybacking on those and yet letting their voices come through so that they can answer those questions that they know are popular, that they know people are asking, and yet answer it with their own take.
I love that. And I do like the I get it. I think it is easy to make it sound like kind of the self-help side of passion. But I do think as brands,
yeah,
we can find things organizationally that are, I guess pun intended, on brand, but are aligned with our purpose, that we do better than others, that can help us. So I think it's easy to get into kind of the you know, what I call checklist marketing a lot of, we're just going to do all of the stuff and it doesn't matter what we're good at. We're going to allocate our resources across all of the stuff, as opposed to, I think sometimes producing standout content might mean that you're producing less content.
Yes. Yeah. You know, everybody's in love right now with this whole idea of the skyscraper post. And I advise clients along those lines. You know, we kind of have the standard 1,000 words or less. We've got to be consistent. I mean, you just have to be. If you're going to launch something, you've got to be consistent. You've got to get content out there on a regular basis so people start to trust you and go to you. And also so you don't have a bunch of negative social proof on your blog with like these outdated posts with no social shares on them. But the problem when it comes to trying to – because nothing ranks better. Nothing gets you more SEO value than a skyscraper post of 2,500 feet, 3,000 words or longer, but it can't just be a regurgitation of what everybody else is doing, sort of like a curated content piece on all the best of the best. You've got to be able to bring your own flavor into it. Whether that's, for myself, finding those running themes of failure, or another one I really like, and you'll see this on a lot of my posts, especially the really long guest posts that I've done on other sites, is this idea of heaven and hell. That marketing, sales, even communication ought to be thought of in theological terms, that everybody's looking to be saved from some hell and delivered to some heaven. And that's one of those things I come back to over and over again, because it's such an interesting way to frame it, and yet you can see it really clearly once your eyes are open to it across the board.
Well, it also kind of makes you, I mean, with that perhaps the most dramatic example that one can think of, it forces you into that, what does this really help someone do?
Yeah. The whole idea of value and actually being helpful, putting yourself in your audience's shoes. Absolutely.
Yeah, because every, you know, I mean, it takes, but I haven't thought, I've never heard that construct before, but it does seem like we have all of these kind of, you know, standard, like you just said, talking about delivering value, all of these things, that we might be able to tease something out, but what are you really saving people from?
Yeah.
Putting it into those terms, I think, you know, you would light up clients, businesses to say, okay, here's the antithesis of us. Here is what we help our customers with.
Yeah. And it makes it emotional. That's one of the other key ingredients to having content that stands out from all that noise, is having it be emotional. You know, it's that idea. I think it was Jeff Madoff. He's the guy that's behind branding at places like Victoria's Secret and Ralph Lauren. And he's a great quote from him where he does just boil branding down to stories so that it's not – I mean, value propositions, mission statements, all these things are great and they're neat. And if they're true to you, you need to have them. You need to talk about them. But what makes those come alive are real stories that cost you something to be committed to them.
Well, and I think too often with stories, I think we think of our story. Here's how I got here, and it's all about me and how we make our widget different, as opposed to a story that puts the audience, places them as an actor in it.
Yes. Oh, that's so clever. Because, I've got a piece coming out, I think, very soon on HubSpot, on branding and storytelling, and especially e-commerce and storytelling. And one of my sort of heroes on this front, and maybe this will tie into a question a little bit later, is a guy named Donald Miller. And Donald Miller started out as straight up writer. He had sort of a autobiography called Blue Like Jazz that was very spirituality focused, turned it into a movie. And then he made this big leap from just being a author writer in almost kind of like the Christian book industry to a serious full scale, full on marketer and brander that people from all walks come to. And he nails it when it comes to exactly what you just said, that what's important is not so much my story, that me focus. Yes, I can tell my story, but telling my story in a way that makes the listener identify so that they can put themselves in my shoes. So for instance, like with that HubSpot piece, I talk about storytelling in e-commerce, not so much in a once upon a time sort of way, but you know, that story structure that Joseph Campbell, Hero with a Thousand Faces, I think is the title of it. Mm-hmm. How do I put my reader, my visitor in those shoes so that when they come to my site, they see themselves as the main character and my product, my service, my brand as just the supporter. I'm just coming alongside of you to get you where you want to go in your journey.
Yeah, it's their story. And I think that it's one of we have several episodes here on the podcast where we've kind of weaved in and out and around storytelling, and it usually prompts that, you know, kind of SMH shaking my head kind of storytelling as a construct being kind of abused by marketers, brand builders as, you know, kind of just some of the BS side of things, but few really breaking it down and understanding structurally what we need to do differently, that it's not just talking about ourselves.
Yeah, you know, like a really simple example of this, someone that does it really well is a company called Muse. And they basically, it's a product that sounds like it would not lend itself to storytelling at all. It's basically a headband that helps you meditate better. So it's this great, like, overlap between like neurology and science, mm-hmm. and, you know, spirituality wearable. And Eastern. What's that?
Is it like wearable tech also?
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. It's wearable tech. It's a headband. But what they do on their site is, you know, if you go and visit it, it's all very focused on the person. So they've got these great images in the hero section and the way they explain how it works that builds on the, you know, the hells of being overwhelmed, not knowing how to get started, feeling the guilt of something like eating better, meditating, sleeping more. You know, they really lay on that. Like everybody kind of can identify with that. And then they just show themselves as coming alongside. We can help you with that. With what you already want, saving you from the things you hate, we can help.
And I mean, that's the, you know, that's where I think too, that way your heaven and hell made me think about this a little more too, because, you know, it does get you into that. And if we, you know, think of ourselves not as the main character in the story and move the customer, the audience member into that role, then our role also becomes more clear too. And it does force you, like the heaven and hell, to think, okay, what am I really doing here? And it often yields an emotional connection that I think right up there with storytelling. You talk about concepts that are used and abused. You talk about emotional branding.
Yeah.
And I think too often that means, okay, we produced a sappy commercial as opposed to actually connecting with someone.
Yes. Yeah. Like, let's do the Sarah McLachlan, make them cry, puppies and kittens who look like they're about to be sentenced to death. Yeah. Where it's just that sappy. It's not an actual, it's not intersecting with the person in a way that has any lasting impact outside of that initial hit of guilt or just a smile. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, I think that it's tricky to kind of get at some of those potent tools, but if we work a little harder, do some of our storytelling homework, we can get there.
Yeah.
So what about the terrifying college students side of your bio, which is of interest to me here as we creep towards the beginning of the school year, and I'm getting ready to continue terrifying college students.
Yes. Yeah. So I live in two different worlds. I split my time basically full time in each spot between the online content strategy, marketing, that sort of thing. And then I'm also a full time instructor here at the local community college in the middle of nowhere, Oregon, Klamath Falls, which none of your listeners or really anybody in the world has any business knowing about. I've been doing this for about 5 years when it comes to the teaching. And obviously, you know, hopefully nobody at the college listens to this, and I don't know if they will because of those foot in both worlds. I'm a big deal in my own mind online, and then I'm just a, you know, teacher among teachers here on the campus. But having my foot in both those worlds, what I love about that so much is I see the application of even the big picture branding things we're talking about right here, heaven and hell, all communication being sales. I see those connections in the lives of the community college students that I'm trying to teach. So I teach the most terrifying college class of all time, Speech 111, Introduction to Public Speaking, which everybody has to take and nobody wants to. Because no, you know, there's that fear side of it. I get welders, aviators, nurses, traditional sort of I'm just getting an associate's degree and I want to transfer off to someplace else kind of folks. And they make all of them take Speech 111. So I start that whole course off with just I realize none of you want to be here and you're freaked out to be here. But here's why it's so important. And boy, every big win in my life has been connected to the ability to speak and write, to take what's in my head and get it out of my mouth, out the tips of my fingers, out the, you know, the tip of a pencil or a pen and into someone else's mind in a way that makes them say yes, whether it's on the personal front or the professional front. So I front load the course with that, and it's the exact same lessons that I bring to clients. I mean, it really is. It's that exact same human-to-human lessons.
Well, and I also think, you know, as you talk about, you know, a very, you know, the basic form of human communication, I have to think that in some of our less is more content insights here too, that, you know, teaching someone to get up and speak and convey a message ultimately probably has some of the same DNA as here's how we simplify and create great content with what you're doing.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, the great thing about having my foot in both those worlds is it's really easy to get seduced sort of by the niche that you're in. So the niche that I'm in the college world is obviously academia. And so it's really easy to be seduced by what plays well. And it sort of, it detaches itself from the real world. And what I really like talking to students about is, okay, you're going to get all of this great academic stuff about citing your sources and works cited pages and not writing in the second person you voice, that kind of thing. And I'm going to say, forget all of that. Talk like a person, talk like a human to other humans. And it gives me that air of credibility because I can point students towards these places where that's precisely what I do. And then I'm also able to, right, because everybody has those like horror stories about, you know, having these works cited pages and all this goofy stuff about how to cite sources and things like that in the college world. And then I show them something I've written for like Entrepreneur. And I'm like, why do you think I'm quoting all of these people? Right? Because I don't have any credibility. And so what I have to do is build off of other people's credibility. And it makes that real world connection super easy to see.
I that's such a great point. And I love, I too, I mean, obviously, like spending my time both places. And it's for that reason. I think they feed one another. And yeah. I think, you know, there's not as much overlap as I'd like to see in terms right. of the others in those worlds in higher ed. I think there's a lot more work to be done there and syncing up a lot of what we're teaching. Because I think some of it, like you said, is teaching the wrong things, is teaching how to look like, you know, the right kind of paper as opposed to
right.
Something that actually does something, is a useful strategic document. So I mean I know that there's, you know, importance and tradition and style and all of that too, but I think it has to, the documents we create, the content we create has a very specific job to do, and doesn't always matter what it looks like.
It's there's so much controversy right now, and there's a bunch of great posts, especially on places like LinkedIn, like the pros and cons of college. Or there was a fantastic piece, I think it was actually one of the cover pieces of Inc. or Wired, about philosophy degrees or humanities degrees, and how you're going to feel like you're not learning anything, but that ability to learn how to think clearly and logically and make connections is vital, even to places like designers, developers, coders, engineers, programmers. So there's this tension between the two worlds, and having an actual, like, physical dog in each fight is, for me, an incredibly sweet spot to be.
I love that. Love it. In thinking about your ultimate content creation checklist, which we'll link to in our show notes, if you were to tease that content without giving away the checklist, where does one start with a content creation checklist?
You know, I start, and this sounds counterintuitive, because I'm going to dominate the conversation I have with new clients about who they're trying to serve. So I'm gonna make them get really, really super clear about their niche, the people that are in it, the demographics. Again, that what are their fears? I've got like 13 or 14 questions just about that idea of hell, trying to frame it in different ways from what are they anxious about? What are they embarrassed about? If they could wave a magical wand and solve one problem in their world, what would it be? That kind of stuff that's all about them. But what I actually start with is the client themselves, you know, talking about what are their goals? What are the stories that they tell in their offices? You know, how can you take those great platitudes that you spent all this time working on that are, you know, that are enshrined on a wall somewhere that everybody ignores now in those mission statements and value statements? And how can you give me real examples of how they play out in the day-to-day activities of your business? So I start with them, and I want them to get really clear about who they are. And one of my favorite questions in that whole them process, where they have to get really clear, is who do you admire? Because there's always going to be these shining examples of the people that they go back to over and over again. But very few people are actually aware at a cognitive level of what the thems are doing, what it is that attracts them to. They just know they have this visceral response every time so-and-so sends them an email, why they love it, but they can't articulate it. So if we can get to a place where they're able to articulate it, then they can start emulating it in a healthy way that isn't just about copy and paste. We act like we're the other person, right? Because that comes off as inauthentic. So I start with them getting really clear about who they are. And then the bulk of it is about their audience, their niche, who they're trying to serve, what makes them unique. I'll tell you, man. So one of my favorite exercises to do with new clients is to send them to those competitor websites, the ones that they say, yeah, I love so-and-so, or I love this book, I love this product, and not just go into that person's own branding, but go into places like their websites, blog comments, and looking at what their customers, their readers are saying back to them. And if you really want to get raw, go to their YouTube pages. If you love somebody that's got videos, go to their YouTube pages and read the comments, because YouTube is like the dark, raw underbelly of the internet. And you want to find out what your potential customers think about, you know, your competition. Man, go there and start mining that for their actual words. It's a scary place to be, but it's brilliant.
Awesome. Well, I love that checklist too, because it sounds like it is really one that encourages some thinking, that draws out some bigger thought too. So we'll be sure to link up to that in our show notes. Speaking of who you admire, who you have a visceral connection to as a brand. What is a brand, Aaron, that has made you smile recently?
You know, I am a borderline cult member of anything Tim Ferriss does. And, yeah, I mean, I devour his podcast. And he's got such a consistent, authentic voice about his own experimentation that he brings to all of these different characters and borderline celebrities. He just had an absolutely amazing, jaw-dropping, I think it was like a three-parter with Jamie Foxx, of all people, you know, comedian, actor. Yeah. And it was awesome because if you listen to back to back his episode, you know, his own podcast version of the interview where he's in the driver's seat, it's got his Tim Ferriss flavor to it. Super long. And then what was really illuminating is he did a companion episode where he actually went on Jamie Foxx's Foxhole Radio, and they did an interview where Jamie Foxx was in the driver's seat and sort of, you know, put Tim Ferriss to task and talked about him being the Oprah of audio. And what really blew me away is, you know, I didn't realize as a listener of Tim Ferriss the kind of cult following he has, because he just doesn't talk about it himself, right? He's not plugging himself. But when he went on Jamie Foxx's show, you know, boy, the stats, the people he's interviewed, the kind of response that Jamie Foxx himself got from being on Ferriss's show blew me away. I talk about how to write popular content. And if you have to say you're cool, you have to say you're popular, you're not, right? If you have to, right. You have to toot your own horn, it's like this real world Mean Girls sort of high school celebrity thing. And what was staggering about listening to those two episodes back to back is realizing how, yeah, Tim Ferriss doesn't do that for himself. He knows the kind of things he's passionate about, and he brings that to every single one, that human experimentation and finding the overlaps between top performers. And yet when someone else interviews him and they are shameless about the kind of influence Tim Ferriss has, it's insanely powerful.
Well, that is great. I love getting personal brands into the brands that have made people smile. And also, it sounds like you have answered some of your own questions because you know exactly why that is and can articulate it in a very clear way.
Oh,
that,
good.
That most can't always, but you have you understand your connection. So where can we point folks to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Well, hopefully you're going to include, you've already mentioned it, that content creation checklist that you can get for free. It's what I do with new clients, but I give it away on my homepage, so anybody can come over and grab it at iconiccontent.com. I tried to be clever. Oh, don't try to be clever in your branding. How's that for a free piece of advice? Don't try to be clever in your branding. When I registered the URL for my site, I had one C in the middle of iconic content, and now everybody butchers it. So put it in the show notes. I won't even try to spell it out loud for them. They can click it and go to it to learn more about me. If this is coming out soon, I will tell you, I just had a piece go up on Unbounce, on the current marketing funnels of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And this piece is probably, it's the most proud I've ever been of something I've put together. I had this amazing list of contributors who agreed to, from like Neil Patel to even really niche sort of folks, like a couple of the authors at Conversion XL and that conversion rate optimization space. Man, I would love to be able to include a link there. It's been unbelievably great, and it's not political. I tried my best to not step on those sort of landmines in the piece, but it is, I hesitate to use the words ultimate, epic, those kind of things because they're so overused. This one is a jaw drop. I mean, it's like 5,000 words, and the 18 contributors were my dream list of people that 2-3 years ago when I started on this, I would have, I would have cried to get to their email addresses, and now they're writing with me, which is unbelievable.
That's awesome. Well, I saw that on your Twitter profile earlier, and we will be sure to include that in the show notes.
Thank you.
As well. Aaron, thanks for joining us on Brand.
Oh, thank you, Nick.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Marie gave us a shout. Marie is from the Philippines, and she gave us a shout on our episode featuring Erica McGillivray of Moz. So big thanks to Marie for contributing to our listenership in the Philippines. And a reminder, if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can find links to everything that we talked about at branddrivendigital.com. You can also subscribe to the show there via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Remember, On Brand is brought to you by the Social Brand Forum. This premier digital marketing experience takes place September 22nd and 23rd in beautiful Iowa City, Iowa. Learn from experts like Jay Baer, Joe Palizzi, and Ginny Dietrich in the heart of the heartland. Listeners of the show get the best rate when they register using promo code ONBRAND at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.